At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies. Thank you so very much for taking the time to listen. I do appreciate you. And as always, feel free to reach out. It's Jeff at beekeepingfornewbies.com. That's N-E-W-B-E-E-S.com. All right, folks, welcome to Bee Buzz episode 22. Today is going to be July 18th on a Thursday. I hope you guys have been enjoying the heat and the rain and everything else that's been going on lately here. I know that first it was heat, and now it's been nothing but rain, and I don't know when we're going to shift back to the heat again, but I've had just about enough for one season here. All right, so I want to kick things off with a special thanks to my brothers and sisters in Ireland. Now, this is a couple of days old here, but as of 13 July, Beekeeping for Newbies was ranked number one in Ireland in the how-to. We were number three in Norway, number six in Barbados, number nine in Greece. So, folks, if you'd like your country to be mentioned, just tell 10,000 of your closest friends about the podcast and the YouTube channel. And if you make it to the top 10, I will let everyone know. But seriously, thank you all very much. I really appreciate you taking the time to listen. It means a lot to me. And I'm glad we have the opportunity to catch up and chat all the time in the Discord room and via email and all that good stuff. Now, quick little podcast update here. You probably noticed that the episodes lately have been a little bit light. I have not been putting out as much as I usually do. I've been really crazy busy lately, in addition to the fact that I've been fighting like these multi-day headaches which are driving me absolutely insane. But I have been working on setting up, I don't want to see a new studio, but kind of incorporating a lot of new technology in and trying to get everything set up. I've kind of gotten a little bit stuck in this analysis paralysis, where I'm just trying to make sure everything is perfect and I just got to stop. So I'm at a point now where I'm starting to press record. And if something doesn't look right, it doesn't sound right, I'm not smiling enough or whatever else it might be, it's just going to have to be what it is. So that's that. Okay. Let's see here. I'm going to jump right in here and get to the questions. We've got quite a few of them today. So hopefully we'll be able to get it all knocked out. Hello, I started listening to your podcast. This is an email, by the way. Hello, I started listening to your podcast a couple months ago and am beginning my journey as a beekeeper. Last week, I discovered my hive absconded. When I opened up, I saw hive beetles and moth larvae. My question is, what do I do now with my 10 frame deep? How do I clean it? Do I freeze the whole thing? I want to try again next year, but haven't had much success finding information on what to do with the hive to prep it for next year. And this is from Jennifer. So the exact same thing actually happened to me the other day. I had a small nuke, and I'll give you kind of a quick piece of background on this nuke. So what happened was a local guy who was actually a listener of the podcast, super good fella. I had a chance to meet up with him, and he lives in my neighborhood. He hit me up and he was like, "Hey, I've been listening to the podcast. I think we're neighbors." And so we started kind of chatting a little bit, and I treated his hive for Varroa using my oxalic acid vaporizer. And again, super nice guy. And he hits me up one day and he's like, "Hey man, I got stung the other night in my driveway. I was just walking through the driveway." And he said, I had an anaphylactic reaction," which this kind of dovetails into another story here, but we're actually going to get him, and maybe even I've been trying to get my allergist. I can't get a hold of her, but I wanted to get him and an allergist on to talk us through all of this, because there is like 10 times greater likelihood of a family member of a beekeeper developing anaphylaxis as opposed to anybody else in the regular population. And I really want to talk about this because this is super important. Just because you haven't had an allergy to bees in the past doesn't mean you can't develop one, or it's at least even develop like a hyperactive kind of response, one that's just a little bit more than it probably should be. So anyway, he says, hey, can you take my bees? I don't want to be involved in this until I figure everything out. I said, yeah, no problem. So I bring them to my house, but it took me a couple days to get them, and they were completely packed in that colony. It took me a few days to get them. By the time I got them to my house, I think I had a couple of days of some weather, and then I got into them and I could tell that they had swarmed. I couldn't tell if they had swarmed prior to me getting them or not. So I was trying to give it a couple of weeks to get a virgin queen mated and to get everything kind of back in order with that colony, because they were definitely queenless at that time. So I took a couple of queen cells. In fact, the day that I opened the hive the first time, there was actually a virgin queen that was emerging from a queen cell that day. So I was able to catch her and kind of, you know, get her back in. But I took another frame that had a couple of queen cells on it. So I moved that frame into a two-frame nuc, and then I gave them a frame of bees and some brood, hoping that they would kind of ramp up and get things going. So I basically was in a situation now where I had the primary main large hive that had no queen, but a massive population. They had some honey and resources and pollen. They had everything they needed. And then I had this small little nuc that was waiting for a queen. So fast forward a couple of weeks, the queen cells in that little nuc were not viable. They did not produce a queen. I opened them up. There was a underdeveloped queen on the inside. I don't know what went wrong. I think that there was some kind of a break in the development cycle in some way. I don't know what caused it, but again, those queens were not viable. The one cell was almost completely empty. There was like royal jelly at the bottom with nothing else. And then the other cell had a queen that looked like she had made it about halfway through her pupa phase. Anyway, so now I've got these two colonies that aren't queenless. So I go out to the main large colony and I do a full inspection on it, and I find a small queen in there. And I'm like, okay, well, there's no eggs and larvae, but there is a queen. So I'm hoping that she's been mated. She's maybe just not laying right now because it's a bit of a dearth. So we'll give her a little bit more time. I caught a swarm in a swarm trap. So I took the swarm trap with that queen and I put her into this small nuc. So the small nuc is trying to ramp up. So here we are in the, you know, the summertime, there's a dearth, there's not a lot of resources. I give them a frame of honey to kind of, you know, kickstart them a little bit. In fact, I had a couple frames of honey and a couple of pollen frames, and they had everything that they needed, plus this new queen, some workers, some brood that was emerging. I had inspected a couple of times, tons of eggs and larvae, everything's going great. Well, right before I had put the honey in, I actually had a feeder in there for a few days. Well, we had all that rain that came through, I don't know when it was, like about a week and a half or so ago, where we had like 6 days of rain in a row or whatever it was. Whenever there was a break in the rain, I just couldn't even get outside to get to them. I had other things going on and I couldn't get out there and do an inspection. When I finally got to them and opened everything up, it was a disaster. I'll tell you what, let me step back for 1 second. The day before I was going out there, when I had some free time, I watched a bunch of bees coming out of the front entrance, and it was not the feeling that I was hoping to have, but I was pretty sure that they were absconding. So I went in, opened the hive, did an inspection. I found some hive beetles in there, so I put a couple of hive beetle traps in, and I wasn't too worried about anything. I figured the traps will do their thing. Well, by the time I got back to do an inspection after that rain came through, the hive beetle trap was completely full of hive beetles. There were hive beetle larvae all over several of the frames. And to make it even better, I had wax moth in there and wax moth larvae. So I went in, got everything out that I possibly could, downsized them, because they were actually in like a double stacked 4-frame nuc. So I downsized them, gave them all clean frames and kind of reset everything. The next morning, I wanted to look at them again and just make sure everything was okay. And I was actually thinking about bringing a feeder back in there since they were really light on resources. And I looked out the window and I saw bees pouring out of the entrance. And I thought, they're absconding. That's the only thing I can think of. And that's exactly what happened. When I got back in, even though I had gotten most of everything out, there were still some wax moth larvae in there. There was still some hive beetle in there. And I ended up losing the entire colony. And you know, it's one of those things where I can say, well, you know, conditions weren't great. It was raining. I didn't want to do an inspection. You know, what do you do in that situation? You know, do you say, well, I'm going to throw on some rain gear and then I'm going to throw my B gear on top of that and go inspect anyway in the rain? I don't think that's the best idea. I don't think that's the best thing for the bees. I guess the key takeaway with that whole story is if a colony is strong, they can handle pretty much anything. They can chase the hive beetles into the corners. They can keep the wax moth out. They can manage all of those things. But when you're starting a colony, I was effectively making a small split in, you know, like late June, you know, and I don't do splits that late in the season. So I knew it was a high risk kind of thing going into it anyway, but I was trying to get this colony kind of salvaged and make use of that swarm and all that good stuff. So again, something to keep in mind, some of the challenges and difficulties that you'll find when trying to feed a really small colony and just to maintain a colony that's in a dearth, that doesn't have a lot of bees, doesn't have a lot of resources. There's a lot of moving parts to it. So to get back to Jennifer's question, that was a really, really long kind of rant. But to get back to Jennifer's question, what do you do with all the hardware? If you have hardware that's been completely destroyed by hive beetle, now I'm speaking specifically to the comb. So if the comb is completely wrecked by hive beetle larvae or wax moth larvae, you're going to have to get rid of it. Now, you can do it in different ways. Some people will just go ahead and throw the whole frame in the freezer, wait 72 hours or, you know, wait until next season or whatever they want to do, and then they put it back into a hive. You can do that, but there's kind of a little bit of an asterisk at the bottom of that. If you're going to do that, try to get rid of the funky stuff first, right? Just take your hive tool, scrape out the big obnoxious things. You know, it's always great to be able to give your bees some drawn comb, and I get that, and that's really cool, but you kind of got to balance it out, right? You don't want to give them just a nasty frame full of dead, a whole bunch of dead, you know, hive beetle and wax moth larvae and all that. So use your best judgment. If there's just a couple of wax moth, you know, larva trails running through, and you can maybe scrape them out or just pick out the things that are in there that shouldn't be and then freeze them, great. If you can't do that, just scrape all that comb out and then you can freeze them, put some new foundation in if you're using wax foundation, if you're using plastic foundation, just scrub it clean. Just, you know, soap and water, get it good and clean, dry it off, freeze it. And, you know, the freezing, it will kill any of the larvae that might still be hiding in a crack or a crevice. And then you can use those again the next season. As far as the hive body itself goes, you know, same thing. I would wash it, clean it. I mean, if you have the ability to actually drop it into a freezer, that's not going to hurt at all. But that's a little bit large for most people's freezers, so that might be a challenge for you. What you really got to watch out for, though, is those wax moths will lay their eggs and those little cocoons all over the place on the insides of hive bodies. You got to scrape those out. You got to make sure you get all that stuff out. Otherwise, they'll just come back again. But like I said, being able to freeze them makes a big difference. So freezing, cleaning, and, you know, package them up appropriately. I usually put my frames and, you know, after I've frozen them, I put them into plastic bags. I put them in a tub and I close them up and put them in a cool, dry area till next season. Okay, next question here. When adding a second super, I've read, and it's a pretty split opinion on whether it should be added on top of an old super or under the old one. Looking for any preferences, pros or cons. So what I advised in this one is I advise to just put the honey super right on top of the blast one. If you envision the way that a hive is typically structured, the center of the entire hive, whether it's in a tree, whether it's in boxes, the center is where the brood chamber is. The honey is on the periphery, on the outsides and up above. If you have honey up above and then you remove it, and you move it higher up, and then you insert a void space, that doesn't really align to the way that bees usually store things. They like that contiguous kind of layout. And it makes sense, too, when it's wintertime and they're inside, you know, inside the brood chamber and they're moving around consuming honey through the winter, they wouldn't have a gap. They wouldn't have a break in that honey. They would be able to move, you know, the entire cluster through the honey. So I recommend just putting your honey supers directly on top of the one before. I think where some people maybe get this idea is when they're thinking about like the thing with brood, where maybe if you raise a brood frame up, you can get the bees to kind of come up into that frame and then they'll start drawing out comb in that deep when you're having trouble getting them to move up into another deep, as an example. I haven't really had the same experience with honey. Now, I have taken a frame of drawn comb and moved it up into a honey super. You know, if you have drawn comb for your honey supers, that's great. It's going to save them a ton of time. But I haven't done that same thing with those. I don't really recommend that. I just like to put them right on top and let them, you know, move straight up. One thing I will caution you on is a lot of people say, well, hey, I want to go ahead and add in an upper entrance. That way it makes it easier for them to come back. I don't recommend doing that because it's just one additional area that the bees now have to defend. And it's a great way, particularly as it gets into a dearth or a time when there is robbing taking place. It's direct access right there to that honey source. So I recommend not using those upper entrances in those scenarios.
As most of you know, I'm a big fan of the outdoors, and most of my time is dedicated to beekeeping and gardening-related discussions. But you probably did not know that one of my responsibilities as a kid was caring for our houseplants. Yes, part of my $5 a week allowance went towards making sure all of the houseplants were healthy and happy. We used to have shamrocks, Christmas cactus, philodendron, and more. Which leads us to today's podcast sponsor, and a special thanks to Palm Street. Palm Street is the best live shopping app for the plant lover community. You can buy and sell rare plants, crystals, ceramics, and other unique goods. Connect with trusted plant sellers and nurseries that sell nationwide. Shop 24/7 and with live human customer support. What I love most about Palm Street is joining a live stream where sellers walk through all the details and characteristics of the plants they're offering. You can get live answers to your questions and see what questions others have asked as well. It's such a great way to engage for buyers and sellers. And as a special offer, new users will receive $5 app credit, 10% off their first order, and up to $6 off shipping for 3 orders. Palm Street, available on Google Play or the App Store.
When I was little, my grandmother had bird feeders and a bird bath in her backyard. Some of my favorite memories growing up were listening to her tell me everything she knew about the feathered friends that visited her yard daily. How amazing would it have been for us to be able to capture images and videos of that experience and to be able to share them with others? Well, if you're ready to take your backyard bird watching to the next level, FeatherSnap makes Wi-Fi-enabled smart bird feeders that blend the best of technology and nature. Get a high-def glimpse of your feathered friends with a top-of-the-line camera so every visitor can be seen with clarity and detail. A unique dual-feeder bin helps attract more species, and built-in solar panels keep your camera's battery going strong. FeatherSnap's mobile app creates a truly immersive experience, allowing you to collect and organize your favorite pics and videos and earn badges along the way. Best of all, FeatherSnap offers expert-trained AI identification of more than 275 North American species thanks to their in-house ornithologist. Check them out today at FeatherSnapCam.com. That's FeatherSnapCam.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, we're talking about varroa mites and treatment, and the question is Apivar versus OA, oxalic acid, and we had this little discussion kind of going back and forth, so I said, look, I'll go ahead and I'll do some math and come up with sort of like a cost-benefit analysis here, so I'm going to run through some of those numbers with you. So Apivar for $13, this is all through Manlake is where I got my pricing. I'm assuming everybody else is going to be relatively close to that. $13 for a 4-pack. So if you have a single colony and you're using 2 strips per treatment, 2 per brood chamber, then you've basically got 2 treatments for $13 or $6.50 per treatment. And then, of course, you multiply that times the number of colonies that you have. And you definitely keep in mind that if you have if you want to buy the larger pack, they do have much larger packs than a 4-pack. So you're going to get a price break as you're buying more, like with just about anything else. The Apivar strips are going to go on and they're going to stay on for, I used to do them for about 4 or 5 weeks, but the packaging says that they need to be on for at least 6 weeks. One thing you want to remember is you don't want to have those on with honey supers. Another thing I'll tell you, a quick tip that just came to my mind here. There is a little flap on the strips. You have the strip in your hand kind of, you know, and there's a flap that comes out. I used to just push the strip flat and have that little piece that comes out just kind of hang on the top of the frame. I found it's really a whole lot easier. Just there's a hole in that already. Just stick a toothpick through it and the toothpick can kind of balance between two frames and the Apovar strip can hang down from it. It's a lot easier. I don't know why I didn't do that a long time ago when I was using it. But anyway, so that's kind of what you're looking at, about $650 per treatment, per hive, you know, assuming you're buying that four pack. Now, oxalic acid, you can get a 2-pound bag of OA for $16. So it's going to be 56 grams. Now, depending on the size of the colony, I think they usually tell you that they want to do 1 gram per brood box. So, you know, you're going to be doing probably between 1 to 2 grams per treatment. And I just, for easy math, I just kind of went in the middle and said 1.5 grams. So that would give you 36 treatments for $16. So it'd be 44 cents a treatment. And then you still, after that, you need to go buy a vaporizer. So I'm assuming that you buy just a cheap, you know, cheap vaporizer on Amazon for $50. So if you get the $50 Amazon vaporizer plus the $16 pack of the powdered or oxalic acid. So that's one approach. Or if you want to lay out the big coin and buy the $450 oxalic acid vaporizer, then you can certainly go that way as well. So I think that break off point for me is probably around like 10 or 15 colonies. I mean, if you got about 10 colonies or so, you might want to consider making the investment, but we'll run through the rest of the math here in a second and you can make a more educated decision. So if we know that with Apovar, you're looking at $650 per treatment per hive. And I did a little more math on here because I found that a 60 pack of Apovar, which is 30 treatments, was $175 at Man Lake. So that brought the cost per treatment down to $583 versus the $650 when you're buying the smaller package. So I'm assuming that your OA vaporizer is only going to last one season for the $50 that you paid. You go through and you do all the math for your 36 treatments that it can do, and it comes out to $1.83 a treatment. So that's $1.38 for the vaporizer, 44 cents for the OA. Now, I don't think you're going to need to do necessarily 36 treatments, but if you're doing 3 treatments, say, per year and you have 12 hives, there's your 36. So the total cost to do the treatments with Apovar is definitely going to be cheaper, you know, with the lower cost of entry and all of that. But you've got to leave them on for 6 weeks. You can't leave them on with honey supers, so that can be disruptive to your honey production. Now, with the oxalic acid, you got a higher entry cost. And of course, it's much higher if you're buying the $450 vaporizer, but you know, it's a pretty good piece of equipment. I mean, I think there's about $20 or $30 worth of intelligence built into it for $450, which is kind of my big gripe about it. But outside of that, it's pretty solid. Okay, so let me go back real quick here. So you're looking at, yeah, so with OA on the $50 piece of equipment, you're looking at $1.83 per treatment, and you're looking at $5.83 per treatment if you're using the packages with Apovar and nothing else. So definitely more expensive in smaller quantities, but less expensive when you scale out with the OA. I like the OA because I can treat. If you've got capped brood inside the colony when you're treating, you do have to treat them a couple of times because the OA won't penetrate the cappings of the brood. I usually do that over like a 10 to 14 day cycle. Just do one treatment every 3 or 4 days, and that usually takes care of that. Okay, the next question that I had was about queen excluders. So to exclude or not to exclude, I've used them for years. I mean, I've been using queen excluders pretty much as long as I've been keeping bees. Some people argue against them because the one thing they say is, well, you know, as bees go through them over and over again, it can damage their wings. And then the other argument has been that, well, you know, you don't need that because the queen, you know, she'll move into whatever space she needs to occupy. And, you know, she's not going to go up above honey. You know, if they have a brood area and then they draw honey above that, she's not going to go past the honey to lay eggs. And I think all of those things are true. And I know that her not wanting to cross a honey barrier is true. But as far as whether or not it damages the wings on a queen excluder when the bees are moving through it, I haven't experienced that myself, but they don't complain to me directly, so I don't know for sure. But I have not had a problem with it. What I would say is if you're using a single brood chamber, if your mindset is that you want a single brood chamber, you probably are going to have to use a queen excluder because she's most likely going to move up. That's just the way it is. If you're using a double brood chamber or pretty much, you know, like 3 mediums, 4 mediums, whatever you want to do, it's not as big of an issue. So the other thing that I think is important is if you're using deeps and mediums, so you're using deeps for the brood chamber and mediums for your honey supers, I would still probably use a queen excluder because I really don't want the queen to accidentally get up there and start laying in my medium frames, because my medium frames are for honey. I say go ahead and exclude. Don't worry about what anybody else tries to tell you. And I always tell people, man, do what's right for you. Do what works for you. Don't let people tell you stuff that, you know, like there's no absolutes in beekeeping. And it drives me nuts when you have people that sit there and try to tell you like, well, this is the way it has to be. This is the only way it's done. And that's not true. And bees have been around for centuries. They figured it out without us, right? So I'm sure that with all the adversity that's in their environment that they deal with every day, I'm pretty sure that we can do things a little bit differently from what another beekeeper does, and it's probably still going to be okay. Okay, the next email I have came in just yesterday, actually, from Brandy down in Alabama. Roll Tide, by the way. And I guess I need to be fair to that other school. I think War Beagle. I think they're big into beagles down there or something. No, I'm just picking. If you guys are War Eagle fans, I'm not giving you a hard time. My dad actually used to live in Alabama, and he was a big big fan, because I mean everybody knows that the SEC has the best football in NCAA, so you know, I mean, it just, you know, Roll Tide. Anyway, so Brandy says, I have a hive that's getting quite large. My mentor says they can support a split with a purchased mated queen. Now I'm going to stop right here, because this is actually really important. So we're talking about mid-July right now. Availability of drones is critical. If you want to do a split and you want to use a queen cell and you want that queen, that virgin queen, to go out and get mated, she's got to have drones. I'm not seeing drones in my colonies anymore. They're not around. So if there are no drones hanging out and congregating, you know, drone congregating areas, that virgin queen's not getting mated. So it's important that whoever told her use a mated queen, that's a good piece of advice. Okay. She says, I'm going for it. The queen will be here Saturday. I have a spot outside my bee yard for them to stay for 2 weeks. But it's not 3 miles, it's more like one. So what she's saying here is, you know, normally you kind of want to give a range. If you need to move a beehive, you want to get them about 5 miles away from where they started so that your foragers don't drift back to the old hive or the original hive site. That's kind of where she's going at with that. However, it's a pretty decent drop in elevation from my bee yard. I've seen my mentor do splits with less, although I know that's not by the book. Anyway, my question is regarding orientation. Since my hives in the bee yard all face east, should I put the new one facing west in their temporary spot just to make them reorient? What I tell people is I do splits all the time in the bee yard. What I will do is I recognize that all the foragers that are in the split that leaves that original location, they're not going to stay there. Those foragers are going to go back to the original colony every time. That's just going to happen. So when I do those splits, I tend to break them down about a 60-40. I'll put about 60% of the resources into the colony that I move, and I'll leave about 40% back at the main colony, recognizing that the foragers are coming back. It's not a big deal. I mean, you know, it's going to happen. You're going to lose foragers anyway. It is what it is. If you do your splits the right way, you'll have plenty of brood that's about to emerge. You'll have plenty of young bees in the new colony that you've already split, and they'll be able to kind of re-ramp things up, working with the queen and get new brood reared and get everything taken care of. So I wouldn't worry about that. As far as orientation itself goes, with like the orientation flights, a new bee walking out the door is going to orient themselves anytime. That's going to happen. So if a bee walks out and something's different from what they saw last time they went out, they're going to start reorienting again. Now, if it's a forager from the other colony, they go out and they go, oh, wait a minute, I'm supposed to be over here, and they leave. But if it's a young bee, I mean, those foragers are only out 10, 15, 20, you know, 18 days, something like that. It just depends on the cycle of the bees and what's going on in that colony. But they're not around that long. So the bees that are going to start to leave that new colony that you split off, it's going to be a lot of their first times walking outside the hive anyway, and they will orient to the new location and it won't be an issue. So I wouldn't worry about that at all. As far as north, south, east, west, the one thing I always tell people is I don't face my colonies to the west or to the north, because that's the direction of cold air, rain, wind, all that stuff, you know, in the wintertime. I generally like to face them south, southeast, you know, due east, anything kind of in that general direction. However, when I am moving them around, if there's pollination contracts, if they're on pallets, when they're on pallets, they're facing all different directions. You can drop a pallet off in an orchard somewhere, and, you know, colony number one is facing north in that orchard, and it's on a different, you know, in a different field on some other land, you know, 200 miles away, and is facing south. You know, it really, the bees don't care. They will come out, they will orient themselves to where they are. They'll do whatever they got to do. They're going to come back home. And then when you relocate them again, they'll figure it out again next time. Well, most of them will be dead by the time that happens, but the newcomers will figure it out. Okay, the next one we have here. Do nurse bees have a less potent sting than foragers? I was doing a mite wash last weekend, and one found its way into the sleeve of my jacket, stung me on the forearm. I didn't even notice it until later when I took the jacket off. It just felt slightly itchy. No pain that I remember. It is not actually all that uncommon to have a bee do kind of a partial sting. It's like she couldn't really commit to the sting, or maybe she kind of knew that she was going to die and didn't want to go all in. But basically what happens is the stinger will kind of puncture your skin, but it doesn't go in far enough for the barb to hook in your skin and then rip the backside of her abdomen out. So you just got kind of a light poke. And like I said, you'll notice the itching because it broke your skin, but she gets to live to fight another day. But as far as, that's what happened. It was just a half sting. And the next question I have here is, what can I expect from the fall flow compared to the spring flow? And what are the signs that it's on? So as always, you hear me say this all the time. If you're in the Discord room, I always say that, the best answer, the most common answer for anything beekeeping related is going to be that depends. It not only depends on where you are. It not only depends on the size of the colony and yes, the flow itself doesn't depend on the size of the colony, but there's other elements to it. The level of activity that you see, the things that you're going to see taking place and going on around that time of year, it's very, very different year to year just in your own bee yard. What I'm going to be looking for, because you're doing regular inspections anyway, and it's critical to stay on top of this. A lot of people think, okay, well, the main spring flow is over. I can take the rest of the summer off. You got to stay inside those colonies because you're trying to make sure that everything's going okay. They've got plenty of resources. If they need to be fed, you're feeding them. Are you seeing any wax moth? Are the hive beetles under control? Is there anything else going on or any other disease or illness that you need to be on top of? So don't let anything slip through the cracks just because there's not a flow on. But what you're going to be seeing is you'll basically go from like where I am. We have a dearth right now. There's nothing going on. There's no forage. There's nothing that's in bloom. So the bees aren't raising new larvae, new eggs. They're not rearing brood. So you'll start to see brood ramp up. You'll start to see as the bees are returning, like you used to see in the spring, pollen sacks loaded down. You'll open up the hive, do an inspection. You'll start to see nectar again. So seeing nectar, seeing pollen on the bees, seeing new brood being reared, getting pollen alerts, just going outside and seeing, you won't see that real heavy, at least in my area. We don't have a real heavy fall flow. We don't have that thing where you go outside and like every surface you touch is completely covered in that orangey yellow pollen. We don't have that in the fall. If you have a light fall flow like I do, I quite often have to feed in the fall because they won't have enough to make it because they had to use so much of their resources just to get through the summer. But as far as, that's pretty much what you would expect to see, right? You're going to expect to see again, the ramping up of brood production and then physically seeing, pollen coming in on the bees themselves. Open nectar, non-capped honey, and all of that. So that's the main difference that you'll see between the kind of the spring and the fall. And the last one was just an email from my friend harassing me. And he says, do you smile in any of your videos? No, I don't smile in my videos. Okay, so there's a nice big smile. For those of you listening on the podcast, I just did a grumpy face followed by a big smile. So all right, folks, that's all I've got for you. For those of you listening, thank you so very much for taking the time to listen. I appreciate that. For those of you watching on YouTube, please subscribe. Please like if you found some value. If you didn't like it and you think it completely sucks, please send me an email and let me know what I can do better. All right, folks, I'm going to wrap everything up. Take care of yourselves. Be kind to one another. And remember that I love you and there's nothing you can do about it. We'll talk to you soon.